Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. It is Carl, and with me today, I have got Amanda Costello, a content strategist from the University of Minnesota. How's it going, Amanda?
It's going great.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. And I have to say, we spoke for a few minutes before we started, and you are my favorite person. And, you know, there's some other people who would be upset to hear that, but they're probably not even listening to the show. So for that reason alone, they are not my favorite person.
They don't need to know. It's a secret.
You are fun. And I can't wait to see you get up on stage at the Digital PM Summit, which is this October 15th through 17th in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Now, that is what we call subtle. Totally under the radar. Nobody picked up that I was just pushing the event.
No, it's also pretty secret.
You're going to talk about how silos learn.
Yeah. So I've been working in higher ed for about 10 years. And although my job is content strategy, I wind up doing a lot of the roles of PM and using kind of PMing best practices because we just don't have a lot of people for individual things. So everyone kind of winds up doing what they can. We're always short on resources, people, time, money, space. So it's kind of everyone chipping in and doing the best thing that they can instead of having one dedicated PM for each project.
Now, this is weird to me that you're in higher ed and yet you know about silos.
Surprise.
In my experience, there are no silos in higher ed.
The best thing that I've heard a lot. I've been talking about silos for a couple of years, but one of the best things I heard about them, there's a friend of mine, Devin Asaro. He just started working at Shopify, and he gave a presentation once where he said that in higher ed, silos are not just a bureaucratic necessity, but they are a closely guarded way of life. So we're dealing with, you know, because the industry, if you will, or the institution of higher education is so old. It's, you know, over 1,000 years old if you think about Oxford or Fez in Morocco, that, you know, Harvard was founded more than 100 years before America started up. So it's been there, even though we don't do things obviously the same as they did in Oxford 900 years ago, it's the same tradition. It's the same tradition of learning. So that just leads everyone to feel that we are, rightly are, part of a longer, bigger thing that's been going on for a very long time. And the organizational silos that show up model that history as well. So sometimes when you talk about changing things up, it's not only saying to the person, oh, we should do this differently, how you're doing it isn't good, but it can be interpreted as how your industry is working isn't doing it well, or your mission-driven organization is bad. Like, people will just bring it on a very personal level very quickly.
Well, I'm really disappointed to hear that we're not operating like Oxford did 900 years ago.
Well, here's a big difference. I'm here and I'm a woman. That wouldn't have happened.
What I said was, I am so glad we don't do things the way they used to at Oxford. You obviously misunderstood me. I can absolutely appreciate silos in higher ed. I mean, if you look at it, you've got professors, people getting up on stage. You know, our industry loves to talk about imposter syndrome, a phrase that I think should just be changed to human condition because we all suffer from it. So in your talk, silos learning, right? I've always been told that silos were a bad thing. It's one of those things you try to get rid of the silos. It prevents you from truly being able to collaborate and create great things together. So you're saying silos aren't bad.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I think is kind of not misleading about my talk, but people will hear the word silos and they think, let's break down silos. They're bad. They're wrecking productivity. They're this terrible thing. And the case that I make in my talk is actually that silos are the structure we want, but they can be used as a framework instead of like a container, that it's actually a good structure to build on to make a better system, because silos and kind of the grouping that we do as human beings is a sociological necessity. It's happens. It's how we do culture. It's how we relate to each other. It came out of evolution. Human beings are going to form groups, and you can't stop them from doing it. So instead of saying, no, we should all, this should just be flat, there should be no silos, we use our silos to, you can build on the structure that you've already got to make something good instead of trying to tear down and start over again and again.
So my company was flat-ish, and we actually would call it lumpy because there are always going to be some people who care more, and they stand up and they lead, because I obviously was not the leader at my company. So, but what's interesting to me is we did have cowboy coders, and we had, you know, groups that wanted to work in isolation. I saw it as my job to actually break down those silos. And what I found was, as I was breaking them down, they were all cask of Amontillado back there, like building them back up. And you're saying this is the natural state, that this is the way we are as humans?
Yeah, well, and they can, one of the other things that I have is, so one of my other weird, I have a lot of weird hobbies, and I love them all. One of them is I really love historical architecture. And I will often just take, I'll say I take architecture breaks. I will go find big, beautiful buildings and just spend time in them because it's a wonderful place for me. And so I read How Buildings Learn, which is by Stuart Brand. He did the Whole Earth Catalog. And it talks about how a building is many different parts of, a building has many components to it. And the different kinds of components can change based on what the human need is for the building, because buildings and architecture are all human inventions to serve different purposes. So I applied the same kind of ideas that Brand applies to physical architecture, to organizational structure, and said, if you can teach a building, you can teach an organizational silo. Because I'm in the Midwest, so I'm surrounded by a whole bunch of, honestly, grain elevators, multiple silos together, that are abandoned because things have changed. Our agriculture changed, and transportation changed, and now we have a whole lot of just, there's a huge complex, probably a block from campus, that has over 187 abandoned silos in just that one complex. So people are thinking about reusing these all over the country. They're you can see them all over the place. They're just not in use anymore, but it doesn't mean that they just need to be torn down.
So what are the ideas for how they're going to repurpose them?
The actual grain elevators?
Yeah.
Well, so there are some of the examples that I give in the talk, there's one, a lot of them along the riverside have been, there was one that was used as projection art. There was an art piece that was installed along the river where people would kind of lay down and then different images would be projected up onto the curved walls of the grain elevator. Mural art, mural competitions have been very common throughout the Midwest. You'll have large complexes that then a city or a town will have a contest for a mural artist to be able to put large scale art. They're very big canvases. I've been in a silo that's been converted to an indoor rock climbing area to do really challenging things. You know, they move the little pegs around on the wall. There is a series of condos on the north side of a lake in Minneapolis that and their shell is an old grain elevator. There used to be a train that went there, and there's not anymore, and the grain elevators are there, so some developers converted them to condos. So a lot of people are taking a look at it and saying, you know, this was built to be this thing, to hold crops and grain and silage, but now it's a structure. What can the structure do, and what can different, how can we change different elements of the structure to make it a different thing based on what people need or want in this area? So that's what I talk about. And then also what can stay? You know, if you tore down a silo, then you would also in some cases be tearing down a canvas for large scale art. So if you're saying it's not a silo, it's a physical concrete canvas. Okay, now we've got a canvas. What do you put on a canvas? So that's the connection that I make to organizational silos.
So I'm curious, what led you to higher ed?
I've almost always been in higher ed. I feel like it's a culture and it's a community that makes a lot of sense to me. The pace I feel like really fits me. And I really love the work that I get to represent with content strategy and project management. Before that, after I graduated from college, I lived and worked in Japan for 2 years. I did some English teaching and I worked on the JET program with the Japanese government.
Wow. How mm-hmm. do you go from working on the JET program to content strategy?
Well,
I mean, hey, if you weren't very good, well, that's okay. Just let people know.
I was ready to come back. Oh, I was ready. Oh, the JET program is, it's the Japan Exchange in Teaching. I'm not an engineer. I wish I was. Yep. Yep. It's an acronym. No. That's another higher ed thing.
I'm good with that. I knew that.
So, I taught for 2 years. It was really wonderful. I really especially loved the students I got to work with in Japan, and I helped a lot of them figure out how to study abroad. Even the students, so English is compulsory in Japanese schools. And I had some kids who were like, oh, I don't want to learn this. I don't want to travel. I don't want to go to America or Australia. I'm never going to use English. Why am I learning this? And I told them that even if they never, ever speak another word of English, if they never hear another word of English, studying a second language will help you be better at your first language. And they, I said, this is a way to get better at Japanese, which I can guarantee you, you will use. And they're like, oh. So I loved working with students, and I had students interested in study abroad. When I came back to the States, I thought about going into some kind of academic advising and being able to be a conduit to help students figure out how to get abroad and how to have experiences in other countries. So I got a job at the university because at the time, if you worked here, you could get a big discount on your tuition. So I was like, why pay for my master's degree when I can work here and have most of it covered? I also came back the year before the recession. So there were jobs to be had. I just needed a job. I got a job here working in one of our kind of research centers and noticed that our website was not the greatest and it needed some changes.
Whoa. You're saying that a university mm-hmm. website wasn't good?
Mm-hmm. I know they're all really tough. Mine was the only bad one. So yeah. I was like, how am I so isolated with the only one bad higher ed website?
In my experience, you must have hit an anomaly. So what did you do to fix this travesty of a website?
Well, at the time I emailed whoever was in charge of the website, who, as it turned out, was Jeff, who is now my boss, and said, hi, our website needs blah, 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 this and that. And he was like, hey, it sounds like you know what you're doing. And he essentially threw me the keys to the website.
What? That is both awesome and terrifying.
He's like, you don't need to run this through me. You can figure it out. So I started to do that. And, you know, I had made my own sites. I had a GeoCities site growing up, and I learned HTML so I could make it just so. And so I started working on our website, and I led us through a website redesign. And then in 2010, I got a position in one of our academic departments doing their departmental website. And I also went to Mini WebCon, which is a local web conference here in Minneapolis. And one of the keynote speakers had just written a book a few months beforehand, and it was Christina Halverson talking about content strategy. So I was all set to go to grad school. I'd taken the GREs. I'd been admitted, and I got back to my desk, and I called them, and I said, I'm not coming. This is what I want to do. This is exactly the work that I want to do.
So you read Christina's book, and you go, this is it. This is what I want to do.
All right, I heard her talk about it. She gave the keynote, and it was just, you know, 1,000 light bulbs going off in my head of not only this is what we need, but this is what I want to do. This is how I want to use my skills and my understanding to make sense of the world for other people. Like, this is how I contribute to the content that I get to represent. And it was amazing.
Well, we worked with the University of Florida.
Okay.
And there's no more argumentative, mm-hmm. scattered,
yep.
Just blown apart concept than how a university and its colleges are going to work together. It just truly is a mess. Now, a few weeks ago, We had the person, a digital project manager, who managed the entire redevelopment, really, of the University of Syracuse's website. So, yeah, getting the university and the colleges together, and they did it in 18 months.
Yeah, that's...
That's amazing, right? It was like, I was blown away. So I'm curious, when you look at your project, how did you organize the universities and the colleges?
Well, I'm not at the university level. I'm actually at the college level in one of our colleges. I'm in education and human development.
Get ready for that to change, because this podcast is going to open doors for you.
Well, I really, like, I think what we do a lot is we have a lot of little mantras that we have on our team. And one of them is choose trust over control. That's one of my boss's big phrases. That's what he did with me when he just tossed me the keys to the website. You know, we have backups that are made every night. And if I screw up super hard, we can just roll it back and we've only lost 2 days of work. So that's what we do. We also have something that's unique in higher ed, and I think in a lot of organizations. We have a dedicated content strategist in each one of our academic departments, as well as someone just dealing with our undergraduate student services, someone focusing on our graduate experience, and someone focusing on our research centers, and then me at the college level pulling that all together. There's enough things that make our departments unique and special that if we had one content strategy for the college and said the college is this and pushed that down, that would be doing a disservice to the differences in our departments, and the departments and the majors and the programs are what our students really identify with. So instead of that, our content strategists in the departments can give me a picture of each department and their goals and their culture and what's going on with them. I can find the connecting threads. So instead of a cover that goes over all of our departments, it's kind of like I'm a supportive surface. Like, if they were all little wintertime snow village set up with each little building, I would be the wonderful antique buffet with the lace countertop to display them on. So I figure out what strategy supports the commonalities instead of trying to force sameness on all of them.
Wow. Listening to you talk about it and the passion in your voice, I'm disappointed we'll never get to work together. So how often do you get together with the other content strategists?
So we're kind of, like you said, University of Florida, we're very widespread. We're in multiple buildings across two cities. There's a Minneapolis campus of University of Minnesota that's on both sides of the Mississippi River. And then we have another campus probably about 4 or 5 miles away in St. Paul. And that is also surrounded by big agricultural test fields. But we have buildings and departments spread across these campuses. So most of the time, people are kind of operating almost like armies of one, especially in the departments. I'm on a web team of 5 folks. But what we do is once a month, we get together and we do co-working. We have a big central kind of meeting area in our offices with a screen if we want to hook something up and just have the bonus of working around other people, being able to shout out, hey, I have this idea. What do people think? Does this sound dumb or weird? We can get feedback from a lot of people, and we find the boost in creativity that comes just from hearing your colleagues' ideas. So we treat it kind of as a distributed team, even though they don't report to me.
That sounds great. And we're huge fans of distributed. We call it people over pixels, that need to still get together, even though you are distributed. So that sounds really great. What do you do when you guys are together?
And we talk about, okay, like, who's watched this TV show or blah, 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 I saw this thing. Or we'll take turns like throwing our monitors up onto the big screen to be like, funny video time. Like just that part of, you know, being friends with your coworkers and having commonalities and saying, okay, we're all human beings that are trying to get this work done. It's also a good chance for me to figure out if we've got a niche on our team to do something new, we want to try something out. I can say, all right, you know, everyone has a need in their departments to, say, display faculty profiles. And our teams come up with a new idea on how to do that. What do y'all think? And someone might say, you know what, right now our department is having a ton of politics. We have a lot of change and upheaval going on. And I think this would just rock the boat too much. Someone else can say, you know, we have a new department chair and they really want to try new things. They really want to be a part of this. So, you know, we'll give it a shot. No problem. They'll sign off on this right away. And then a third person will say, you know, we might be up for that, but if that department can do it first, then our chair will say, oh yes, now we definitely want this. So yeah, we kind of, I don't know, motivate that way. We'll have departments that are cool with trying stuff out, and then we'll test it. And if it works, other departments will say, hey, we want that. And that's, we could say, great, if you want this, this is the way we do it. Here's how our process works. Here's what we do. And we go along that way.
The interesting thing to me in the way that you're working is, well, humans, mm-hmm. we have this need mm-hmm. to be independent, but also be part of a group. And you're embracing that natural order of how we work together. That's just refreshing instead of trying to change it.
Yeah. And it's really, silos are frustrating and can be toxic and harmful. And that's why many people are upset by them. But I think jumping straight to the solution of tear them down, doesn't work. And even if it is, like you said, with your position at your company, you were able to tear down silos. But again, it was because you were at a position near or at the top. And that's really the only way that a silo can actually be dismantled. It's very hard to do from the middle where most people are. And then, like you said, you saw people start to rebuild them. They would, you know, brick them back up. So I don't think, one, tearing down silos isn't something that everyone has access to, nor do I think it's the best course of action. And someone, I was just at Confab Central last week here in Minneapolis, nerding out really hard about content strategy for a whole week. My boss called me with a work thing one day, and he's like, hi, sorry to interrupt church. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty true. we were talking about this, and someone asked, if you were given an organization, if you arrived in an organization and it was completely flat, like they had a flat, you know, setup going on, what would you do with that? And, you know, first I asked, like, is it a problem that it's like, do they want organizational change? But if they did, I said I would build silos, and I would build them thoughtfully. I would build them for collaboration, but I would also build them so people can have team and group identity. And because people will build that structure. It's, you know, if you give a bird a birdhouse to build a nest in, it will build the nest. If you don't, it will build the nest somewhere else. So it's giving folks constraints and giving encouraging structure. It's like good design principles that if people want to walk somewhere, they will walk there. So yeah, if you build a path there, they will then walk on the path. So yeah.
Well, Amanda, I am so glad that we had this opportunity to reconnect today. I'm super excited to see you in October at the Digital PM Summit. And it's actually our fifth one. So that's just kind of remarkable to think that this has been happening for 5 years that digital PMs have been getting together.
I hadn't realized that until I saw, I looked up on the website. It was like the fifth one. Like it's, I had a blast at the last one, and I've recommended it to people who don't even work just as dedicated PMs. Like my job is not a PM, but I wind up doing a lot of work of a PM because the best practices and the new ideas and everything that I learned at the last one I'd attended in Austin still come back, and they're able to be implemented on even small stuff to make projects run even a little bit smoother. Like the takeaway, I came back to work with so much stuff that I could use right away, but I came back with stuff that took me longer but still had a big effect. So it wasn't just, you know, sometimes people say, why go to that conference? I can just read a blog post about the 10 top blah, blah, blah. And I certainly got a lot of like, hey, try this tool or look at this thing. But I got strategies from the last one that could be implemented over time and show really a lasting effect. So I'm super excited to come back as, you know, not only I'm excited to speak, but as a learner. it's great.
Well, and now if anybody listened to that and isn't thinking about going, I don't know what we have to do. So thanks for listening to this episode of the Bureau Briefing, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a great one.